From NPR News, this is live special coverage. I'm Robert Siegel. President Obama is about to address the nation from the White House. His objective is to set out a strategy for countering the jihadist group that now calls itself the Islamic State. In fact, he will spell out the goal of degrading and ultimately destroying the group that he and his advisors call ISIL, the Islamic State in Iraq and the Levant. We refer to it as ISIS here, which stands for the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria. The president has ruled out U.S. ground forces returning to Iraq or entering Syria. There is much talk of more airstrikes, and he's been speaking of partners in the region whom the U.S. would train and equip. This summer, ISIS surged from Syria, where it's one of the groups fighting against the government and gaining ground there, to Iraq, where the group started out. In Iraq, ISIS seized control of the country's second-largest city, Mosul, when the Iraqi army folded in the face of battle. The ISIS advance has featured mass executions of captured soldiers and members of Iraqi minority groups, but what seems to have galvanized U.S. public opinion are the videos ISIS posted online of two American journalists being beheaded, killings that an ISIS English speaker said were payback for U.S. airstrikes against the group. Polls now show strong support for more U.S. airstrikes. After the president's speech, we'll hear from our correspondents, from members of Congress, from a panel of experts. But first, we will hear from President Obama at the White House.
My fellow Americans, tonight I want to speak to you about what the United States will do with our friends and allies to degrade and ultimately destroy the terrorist group known as ISIL. As Commander-in-Chief, my highest priority is the security of the American people. Over the last several years, we have consistently taken the fight to terrorists who threaten our country. We took out Osama bin Laden and much of al-Qaeda's leadership in Afghanistan and Pakistan. We've targeted al-Qaeda's affiliate in Yemen and recently eliminated the top commander of its affiliate in Somalia. We've done so while bringing more than 140,000 American troops home from Iraq and drawing down our forces in Afghanistan, where our combat mission will end later this year. Thanks to our military and counterterrorism professionals, America is safer. Still, we continue to face a terrorist threat. We can't erase every trace of evil from the world, and small groups of killers have the capacity to do great harm. That was the case before 9/11, and that remains true today. And that's why we must remain vigilant as threats emerge. At this moment, the greatest threats come from the Middle East and North Africa, where radical groups exploit grievances for their own gain. And one of those groups is ISIL, which calls itself the Islamic State. Now, let's make two things clear. ISIL is not Islamic. No religion condones the killing of innocents. And the vast majority of ISIL's victims have been Muslim. And ISIL is certainly not a state. It was formerly al-Qaeda's affiliate in Iraq and has taken advantage of sectarian strife and Syria's civil war to gain territory on both sides of the Iraq-Syrian border. It is recognized by no government nor by the people it subjugates. ISIL is a terrorist organization, pure and simple. And it has no vision other than the slaughter of all who stand in its way. In a region that has known so much bloodshed, these terrorists are unique in their brutality. They execute captured prisoners. They kill children. They enslave, rape, and force women into marriage. They threaten a religious minority with genocide. And in acts of barbarism, they took the lives of two American journalists, Jim Foley and Stephen Sotloff. So ISIL poses a threat to the people of Iraq and Syria and the broader Middle East, including American citizens, personnel, and facilities. If left unchecked, these terrorists could pose a growing threat beyond that region, including to the United States. While we have not yet detected specific plotting against our homeland, ISIL leaders have threatened America and our allies. Our intelligence community believes that thousands of foreigners, including Europeans and some Americans, have joined them in Syria and Iraq. Trained and battle-hardened, These fighters could try to return to their home countries and carry out deadly attacks. I know many Americans are concerned about these threats. Tonight, I want you to know that the United States of America is meeting them with strength and resolve. Last month, I ordered our military to take targeted action against ISIL to stop its advances. Since then, we've conducted more than 150 successful airstrikes in Iraq. These strikes have protected American personnel and facilities, killed ISIL fighters, destroyed weapons, and given space for Iraqi and Kurdish forces to reclaim key territory. These strikes have also helped save the lives of thousands of innocent men, women, and children. But this is not our fight alone. American power can make a decisive difference, but we cannot do for Iraqis what they must do for themselves. Nor can we take the place of Arab partners in securing their region. And that's why I've insisted that additional U.S. action depended upon Iraqis forming an inclusive government, which they have now done in recent days. So tonight, with a new Iraqi government in place, and following consultations with allies abroad and Congress at home, I can announce that America will lead a broad coalition to roll back this terrorist threat. Our objective is clear. We will degrade and ultimately destroy ISIL through a comprehensive and sustained counterterrorism strategy. First, we will conduct a systematic campaign of airstrikes against these terrorists. Working with the Iraqi government, we will expand our efforts beyond protecting our own people and humanitarian missions so that we're hitting ISIL targets as Iraqi forces go on offense. Moreover, I've made it clear that we will hunt down terrorists who threaten our country wherever they are. That means I will not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well as Iraq. This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven. Second, we will increase our support to forces fighting these terrorists on the ground. In June, I deployed several hundred American service members to Iraq to assess how we can best support Iraqi security forces. Now that those teams have completed their work and Iraq has formed a government, we will send an additional 475 service members to Iraq. As I've said before, these American forces will not have a combat mission. We will not get dragged into another ground war in Iraq. But they are needed to support Iraqi and Kurdish forces with training, intelligence, and equipment. We'll also support Iraq's efforts to stand up National Guard units to help Sunni communities secure their own freedom from ISIL's control. Across the border in Syria, we have ramped up our military assistance to the Syrian opposition. Tonight, I call on Congress again to give us additional authorities and resources to train and equip these fighters. In the fight against ISIL, we cannot rely on an Assad regime that terrorizes its own people, a regime that will never regain the legitimacy it has lost. Instead, we must strengthen the opposition as the best counterweight to extremists like ISIL, while pursuing the political solution necessary to solve Syria's crisis once and for all. Third, we will continue to draw on our substantial counterterrorism capabilities to prevent ISIL attacks. Working with our partners, we will redouble our efforts to cut off its funding, improve our intelligence, strengthen our defenses, counter its warped ideology, and stem the flow of foreign fighters into and out of the Middle East. And in 2 weeks, I will chair a meeting of the UN Security Council to further mobilize the international community around this effort. Fourth, we will continue to provide humanitarian assistance to innocent civilians who've been displaced by this terrorist organization. This includes Sunni and Shia Muslims who are at grave risk, as well as tens of thousands of Christians and other religious minorities. We cannot allow these communities to be driven from their ancient homelands. So this is our strategy. And in each of these four parts of our strategy, America will be joined by a broad coalition of partners. Already, allies are flying planes with us over Iraq, sending arms and assistance to Iraqi security forces and the Syrian opposition, sharing intelligence, and providing billions of dollars in humanitarian aid. Secretary Kerry was in Iraq today, meeting with the new government and supporting their efforts to promote unity. And in the coming days, he will travel across the Middle East and Europe to enlist more partners in this fight, especially Arab nations who can help mobilize Sunni communities in Iraq and Syria to drive these terrorists from their lands. This is American leadership at its best. We stand with people who fight for their own freedom, and we rally other nations on behalf of our common security and common humanity. My administration has also secured bipartisan support for this approach here at home. I have the authority to address the threat from ISIL, but I believe we are strongest as a nation when the President and Congress work together. So I welcome congressional support for this effort in order to show the world that Americans are united in confronting this danger. Now, it will take time to eradicate a cancer like ISIL. And any time we take military action, there are risks involved, especially to the servicemen and women who carry out these missions. But I want the American people to understand how this effort will be different from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It will not involve American combat troops fighting on foreign soil. This counterterrorism campaign will be waged through a steady, relentless effort to take out ISIL wherever they exist using our air power and our support for partners' forces on the ground. This strategy of taking out terrorists who threaten us while supporting partners on the front lines is one that we have successfully pursued in Yemen and Somalia for years, and it is consistent with the approach I outlined earlier this year, to use force against anyone who threatens America's core interests, but to mobilize partners wherever possible to address broader challenges to international order. My fellow Americans, we live in a time of great change. Tomorrow marks 13 years since our country was attacked. Next week marks 6 years since our economy suffered its worst setback since the Great Depression. Yet, despite these shocks, through the pain we felt and the grueling work required to bounce back, America is better positioned today to seize the future than any other nation on Earth. Our technology companies and universities are unmatched. Our manufacturing and auto industries are thriving. Energy independence is closer than it's been in decades. For all the work that remains, our businesses are in the longest uninterrupted stretch of job creation in our history. Despite all the divisions and discord within our democracy, I see the grit and determination and common goodness of the American people every single day. And that makes me more confident than ever about our country's future. Abroad, American leadership is the one constant in an uncertain world. It is America that has the capacity and the will to mobilize the world against terrorists. It is America that has rallied the world against Russian aggression and in support of the Ukrainian people's right to determine their own destiny. It is America, our scientists, our doctors, our know-how that can help contain and cure the outbreak of Ebola. It is America that helped remove and destroy Syria's declared chemical weapons so that they can't pose a threat to the Syrian people or the world again. And it is America that is helping Muslim communities around the world, not just in the fight against terrorism, but in the fight for opportunity and tolerance and a more hopeful future. America, our endless blessings bestow an enduring burden. But as Americans, we welcome our responsibility to lead. From Europe to Asia, from the far reaches of Africa to war-torn capitals of the Middle East, we stand for freedom, for justice, for dignity. These are values that have guided our nation since its founding. Tonight, I ask for your support in carrying that leadership forward. I do so as a Commander-in-Chief who could not be prouder of our men and women in uniform. Pilots who bravely fly in the face of danger above the Middle East, and service members who support our partners on the ground. When we helped prevent the massacre of civilians trapped on a distant mountain, here's what one of them said. "We owe our American friends our lives. Our children will always remember that there was someone who felt our struggle and made a long journey to protect innocent people. That is the difference we make in the world. And our own safety, our own security, depends upon our willingness to do what it takes to defend this nation and uphold the values that we stand for. Timeless ideals that will endure long after those who offer only hate and destruction have been vanquished from the earth. May God bless our troops, and may God bless the United States of America.
President Barack Obama finishing his address to the nation on his strategy to deal with the extremist group that calls itself the Islamic State. Over the next 45 minutes, we're going to be hearing about this speech, its implications. We'll be talking with NPR Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman. Deb Amos, who's near the Syrian border, will also hear from a panel of experts, from members of Congress. And we'll start with NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley. Scott, let's sum up what the president just said.
Well, the president was addressing an American public that has been alarmed by the spread of the Islamic State, but has also been rattled by the president's own leadership style. So this was an opportunity for Barack Obama to try to reassure the American public that, as he said, a core principle of his presidency, if you threaten America, you will find no safe haven.
And he said that that would justify striking at targets in Syria as well. No mention in the speech about whether the Congress is supposed to vote on something here.
Well, he did talk about asking Congress to support authorizing the U.S. military to equip and train the Syrian ground troops. But the president has drawn a distinction here between that effort and the use of air power. And he has, and the White House has also made very clear that they won't be limited or hamstrung by congressional inaction in going after Islamic State militants from the air, whether a wider range of targets in Iraq or across the border in Syria.
I guess the topic sentence here, our objective is clear, we will degrade and ultimately destroy ISIL through a comprehensive and sustained counterterrorism strategy.
And sustained there is a key word, because the president said this is something that's not going to happen quickly, it's going to take time, and it's also not going to happen with U.S. forces alone. This is going to be a coalition effort.
President was speaking to a nation that has really been public opinion has shifted radically on this subject just in the past few weeks.
You know, it was exactly a year ago tonight that this president called on Congress to authorize airstrikes against Syria. In that case, in response to Bashar al-Assad's crossing of the red line with respect to chemical weapons. And it quickly became clear that neither the public nor the Congress had any stomach for that sort of authorization. We've really seen a sea change in recent weeks, particularly with the release of those videos of the beheadings of the American journalist. And now a majority of American public is interested in taking the fight to the Islamic State, even as they remain wary about getting dragged into another lengthy Middle Eastern war.
And while the Islamic State, ISIS, is in fact fighting against the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, the president did mention that President Assad has forfeited any right to govern Syria.
Well, there have even been suggestions that maybe the U.S. should ally with Assad here to go against Islamic State, and the White House has been clear that's not in the cards. The challenge will be, how do you fight the Islamic State in Syria without inadvertently giving comfort to Bashar al-Assad?
Okay, Scott Horsley, thanks so much. It's our White House correspondent, Scott Horsley. More to come, more discussion of President Obama's speech about his strategy against the group that calls itself the Islamic State, when special coverage from NPR News continues. You're listening to live special coverage from NPR News. President Obama just delivered his speech on his strategy for dealing with the threat posed by ISIS. And for more analysis of that strategy, we turn now to our Pentagon correspondent, Tom Bowman, who joins me in the studio. Tom, how important is the train and assist part of the president's strategy?
It's very important. It's key. But it's important to note, too, that there are roughly 300 American military personnel already in Baghdad assessing the Iraqi forces. I'm told they've estimated that anywhere from 30% to 50% of Iraqi units either don't have competent leaders or have simply disintegrated, okay? And the president, of course, said tonight that roughly 500 more military personnel, U.S. military personnel, will be sent over. They're not combat forces. They'll be helping with training and intelligence and equipping the Iraqi forces so the Iraqi forces could go on the offense here. But the question, of course, remains, if half the units aren't competent, what are these 500 U.S. military personnel going to do?
Of course, what happened in Mosul was a demonstration of complete incompetence.
The other question we don't have with this, the president didn't give any more detail, is will these U.S. military personnel be only relegated to headquarters? Will they go out in the field? Will they be with small units? Will they call in airstrikes? They won't have a combat unit, but how effective can they be when the Iraqi military is in such bad shape?
Do you hear anything here new about airstrikes? What's going forward?
Well, the president famously said a few weeks ago, the U.S. will not be the Air Force of Iraq. That changed tonight. The president said there'll be a systematic campaign of airstrikes. We'll expand our efforts. There have been about 150 airstrikes so far. He said we'll hit ISIL targets, you know, as Iraqi forces go on the offense. And then he said, I'll not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well. That's important to note. I'm told we could see some airstrikes along the border with Iraq and Syria, but they're still coming up with an intelligence picture in Syria, so don't expect a lot of strikes in Syria maybe just yet.
Should we assume, by the way, that no matter how many allies are engaged or how many groups are being trained, that the U.S. is going to be running this show?
Absolutely. U.S. is going to be running this show. There's no question about it.
It's NPR Pentagon correspondent Tom Bowman. Thank you very much.
You're welcome, Robert.
Tom, and speaking of the Syrian border, NPR's Deborah Amos listened to the president's speech from southern Turkey near the border with Syria, and she joins us right now. Deb, on the training part of the president's strategy, what are you hearing from Syrian rebels?
Well, there has been a continuous program. It's small, it's covert, it's run by the CIA. And so I'm sure that they were listening intently to what the president has in mind. By asking Congress to authorize, it does take time. Mm-hmm. And that is a key worry for moderate rebels here. How long does it take to ramp this up? We're now hearing 20 rebels, 50 rebels. There's been some expansion of the program, but it's still really not enough to make a difference on the ground.
Give us a sense of what ISIS is currently doing in Syria.
They're running a city, the city of Raqqa, which they took more than a year ago. And I've been on the border talking to people who live in Raqqa, and they describe a bureaucracy that's being set up. There are tax collectors. There are there's a police force. One of them is a female police force that has actually attracted women from as far away as Britain to come, because the genders are separate in Raqqa. Schools will open in September, and there's been training for teachers. If they don't come to the Islamic State training, they cannot teach in the schools there. The curriculum has been changed. So what you have is an administration in Raqqa, run by the Islamic State, and it is quite extensive.
You spoke earlier today about how if the United States steps up action in Iraq and Syria, it will be entering what is effectively Iran's playing field, too. And from what you heard from the president this evening, how might that work go against Iran's goals in the region or go in favor of Iran's goals in the region?
Well, it depends on what country you're talking about. They are relatively on the same side in Iraq. They are on opposing sides in Syria. And that will complicate the Syrian part of this puzzle. And I'm sure the White House is quite aware of that. And that's why the plans for Syria were certainly less, had less details than the ones for Iraq.
Were there any surprises here for you, or was everybody pretty much expecting this, Deborah?
Well, there's been such telegraphing of what the president was going to say for days that it's been no surprise. Even here, when you talk to rebels, they're very aware, and they read the New York Times to find out what's happening in Washington because it affects them. So there were really no surprises. I think that it is noteworthy to say that the U.S. is going to step up its role in the Syrian civil war. That's the takeaway message of the speech tonight.
Thank you very much. NPR's Deb Amos speaking to us from southern Turkey. Joining us now is Senator Ron Johnson, Republican of Wisconsin, member of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. Welcome to the program, Senator.
Hello, Robert.
Last year, when the question was, should there be airstrikes against the Syrian regime, you weren't on board. Are you on board with what the president has proposed tonight?
Listen, we all want President Obama to succeed because that means America will succeed and remain safe. And so I think Republicans want to do everything we can to support strong and resolute action on the part of this president.
Does that mean indeed supporting the very program of airstrikes and training local forces that he set forth in this speech?
Yes, but again, we want to see the details of this. I can tell you some of my concerns, though. Certainly what I want to see out of this president tonight is to clearly articulate exactly what our goal is and convince me and Americans and our allies that he is 100% committed to it. But I am concerned because he stated that the goal is to degrade and ultimately destroy, but at the same time said no American combat troops to the ground. And then he closes the speech by saying our own safety, our own security depends on our willingness to do what it takes. And he's already taken some of those potential actions off the table.
So it sounds to me, Senator, that what you're saying is he shouldn't be ruling out putting U.S. Troops on the ground in the region.
He shouldn't be, Robert. Let's face it. When we surged American troops to defeat 68,000 al-Qaeda in Iraq troops or militants, it took us, we had 135,000, or more than 130,000 American troops on the ground. We surged more than 160,000 troops. That's what it took. That's what we used to defeat al-Qaeda in Iraq. And, of course, President Obama said that ISIS is the successor organization. Now we're hearing reports that the numbers are over 10,000. Their numbers are growing. We may hear even larger numbers. They're better equipped, better trained, more organized. They control territory. This is a far more effective fighting force that we're facing now, and President Obama's, we're not going to have American troops really engaged in the combat.
But Senator Johnson,
we're not going to be able to defeat them. We're not going to be able to destroy them.
Yeah, there are two different criticisms, though. I want to make sure I understand which one you're making. One is don't take threats off the table. Don't tell your enemy that you're not going to do something. He should be concerned that you might. The other is send U.S. ground troops into the region. Which one are you saying?
What I'm saying is commit to the goal, whatever it's going to take. And you don't signal immediately to the people you're going to try and build a coalition around, who your allies are. You don't signal, these are the things we're not going to do, at the same time saying we're going to do what it takes. I mean, which is it? It's ambiguous. It's not the kind of clarity we absolutely need in this situation.
Okay. Well, Senator Johnson, thank you very much for talking with us this evening.
Have a great night.
That's Republican Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin. We're going to hear from another lawmaker now, a Democrat. This is Congresswoman Jackie Speier of California, whom we heard from on All Things Considered yesterday. You heard what the president had to say. He intends not only to strike at ISIS in Iraq, but also in Syria. First of all, does he have the authority to do that?
I don't believe he has the authority to go into Syria. I mean, he is relying on, an article in the Constitution or the authorization for use of military force dating back to 2001 when we gave the president the ability to do so against al-Qaeda. It would be a stretch to say that ISIL is part of al-Qaeda. They were an affiliate many years ago, but everyone knows that al-Qaeda has disengaged with them. So I feel very strongly that the president has to come to us if he wants to go into Syria with airstrikes.
You're saying as a constitutional matter, you think he must do that. If he did, would you be inclined to support him from what you've heard?
Not from what I've heard tonight. I really feel very strongly that we have to have a timeline, not necessarily fixed, but in generalities as to how long we're going to be engaged in that. We've been hearing that this could be another Cold War. I'm not willing to conduct what is, for all intents and purposes, another war that will go on for the length of the Cold War. I think that we have got to have a better sense of the threat to the homeland, and I think that we have to establish more specifically what the commitment is from the other Arab countries in the area. And I mean specific commitments in terms of dollars, cents, and boots on the ground.
Representative Speer, just before you came on, we heard Ron Johnson, the Republican senator from Wisconsin, saying that the aim that President Obama has set forth will require U.S. troops on the ground, and he shouldn't remove that option. What do you think of that?
Well, I agree with the first part, and I don't agree with the second part. I think my hesitation has been for some time, how do you conduct yourself in Syria by just training a group of persons there that you have somehow deemed are part of the opposition? Well, ISIL was part of the opposition, and you know, if we had gone into Syria a year ago, we may have been providing them with equipment and training. So I think it's more than 475 additional. We're now over 1,000. With this 475, we're at 1,400 troops on the ground providing some assistance, not combat, but assistance to all of these groups. So I worry about what we're really saying here. And the American people have to hear it straight. We've got to be able to say this is what it's going to be.
Representative Speer, thank you very much for talking
thank
with us.
You.
I'm just going to play an excerpt from President Obama's speech for a moment on the subject of Congress. This is what he said.
But I believe we are strongest as a nation when the President and Congress work together. So I welcome congressional support for this effort in order to show the world that Americans are united in confronting this danger.
That's what the president said. We've just heard from a conservative Republican in the Senate and a liberal Democrat in the House, and it would appear that he has much work to do to win that kind of support on Capitol Hill. I want to welcome our panel of experts in the studio. They've been patiently sitting here after hearing the president's speech. They are, first, Tamara Kaufman-Wittes, who's senior fellow and director of the Center for Middle East Policy at the Brookings Institution, former deputy assistant secretary of state for Near Eastern Affairs at the State Department. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Retired Army Lieutenant General Michael Barbero, who was deputy commander in Iraq until January of 2011, now doing some consulting for energy concerns in the Mideast, including in Iraq. Thank you for joining us here.
Thank you, Robert.
And Vali Nasser, who is dean of the Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Good to see you again.
Thank you.
So first question, there are some words that were used in this speech, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on them. One of them is destroy, ultimately to destroy ISIL. First, Mike Barbero, when you're in the service and you get an order to destroy that movement, what does that mean?
Well, destroy is pretty clear-cut, and it means that you will eradicate the enemy forces wherever they are and wipe them out. And the question is, you know, that's one of the disconnects I see in this strategy. Are we ready to do that when we won't even talk about bombing in Syria? This means we will go into Syria and
Well, the president
Iraq.
Says he's willing to bomb in Syria. He has some objections.
Right.
To that.
But we've been trying to destroy Al-Qaeda for over a decade. It is hard work. And it's going to take hard work in and on the ground in Syria to do that.
What about the idea of U.S. air power in support of local forces, the Kurds, the Iraqi army?
Neither the Kurds nor the Iraqi forces are capable nor ready to take on this fight to dislodge ISIS from Iraq. And I see no indications that the Syrian forces are capable of doing that in Syria. So a vital part of this is dislodging and pushing ISIS out of these occupied areas. And I don't see the forces on the ground ready to do that for quite some time.
Tamara Wittes, did the president's speech make sense to you?
I think it made a lot of sense in terms of the pieces of the strategy. I think where he hurried actually on into the four components of his strategy, and where I think there could have been more was on the definition of the threat, explaining to the American people why he's compelled to do this in the face of their skepticism, their reticence, and his own preferences expressed over such a long period of time. What's the nature of the threat that compels this? And how do we know when we've won? And Congresswoman Speer asked that question as well. I think we're going to be hearing a lot about that. how do we know when this is going to be over? Without defining the threat properly, you don't know when you've achieved success.
Yeah. Of course, the moment, event that pushed support in the polls up to 70% for airstrikes in the region, what did that was the release of the videos showing two American men being slaughtered by ISIS. The president said in his speech that right now that ISIS doesn't pose an imminent threat of taking action in the United States, but down the road they might.
Absolutely. And there's no question that those videos brought about a loosening of the public constraints that the president and Congress have been facing in confronting this challenge over the last couple of years. It's no accident that he defined the threat as a potential threat to the homeland, something we have to address now. And yet, in many ways, from the regional perspective, what's driving this is a threat to regional order. This is a group that's overrunning borders, trying to overrun governments. That's the threat to U.S. interests. That's the threat to global security. That's what we need to combat.
Vali Nasser, you've written that what's lacking in this whole discussion has been some grand strategy, some vision of world affairs within which U.S. actions in Iraq or Syria would make sense. I mean, what would that be if the president had articulated a grand strategy that this action is part of? What should he say?
Well, first of all, I think the part of it, the audience for this speech is not just Americans, is also the very countries that we are trying to put together as our allies. Mm-hmm. And I think what they would look for are two things. One is that the United States has a strategy, has a roadmap, not just for degrading ISIS. And I don't think anybody believes what the president says will actually destroy ISIS, especially given all the caveats and the issues that he took off the table. So I don't think that it's convincing in terms of having an end game there. Yeah. But also I think he said that it will take some time to do this, but there's no sense that the United States actually is committed long run to seeing this through. And the president did not provide a roadmap as to what comes after you destroy ISIS, even if he does that. Who is going to rule over this vast Sunni area in Syria and Iraq? How do we know that 3 months after you destroy ISIS, there's not going to be another Islamic caliphate under a different name that will come in its place? And unless he's willing to actually commit not only to having boots on the ground, but actually to some degree of nation building in both Iraq and Syria, this is a forever conflict that we're going to be back there.
So if I hear you right, in the phrase, we will degrade and ultimately destroy, first of all, a key word there is ultimately. That's a more distant project to destroy ISIS.
Absolutely. But also we use these words in order to compel our allies to support us. But they've heard this kind of talk from the president before. Mm-hmm. They heard it over Syria's use of chemical weapons, the famous red line a year ago that he didn't go through with. And I think there's skepticism over the way we handled Afghanistan, the way we handled Iraq. These are not success cases we're pointing to. And if you listen to him, this was a repeat of Afghanistan's strategy.
That's Vali Nasser. We'll continue this conversation with him, with Tamara Kaufman-Wittes, and with Mike Barbero after this break. You're listening to special coverage of the president's speech about ISIS from NPR News. You're listening to live special coverage on NPR News of the president's address on his strategy to deal with the extremists who call themselves the Islamic State. And joining us now is Democratic Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island. He's on the Senate Armed Services Committee. You said a couple of weeks ago, Senator, that the president could take immediate action against ISIS if he determined it posed an immediate threat, but said a long-term intense operation would be another issue. So what do you think after this speech tonight?
Well, I think the president laid out a very comprehensive, multidimensional, and multilateral strategy. And initially, he is able to and has the authority to strike at targets that pose a threat to the United States' interests in Iraq and other places. And in fact, it is in some respects a continuation of many of the operations that he has directed in Yemen and Somalia. So at this juncture, I think he is well within his authority to defend the interests of the United States and to degrade and destroy ISIL.
Do you think there's any mismatch between the objective of degrading and destroying ISIL and the guarantee that U.S. troops won't be sent to fight?
No. In fact, I think the wisest strategy is to use our advantages, which is clearly air power, intelligence, training efforts, and to use the forces on the ground trained by the United States, indigenous forces, to complement our strengths. That strategy, I think, proved to be successful with Peshmerga just a few weeks ago, and I think we can continue that strategy, and we should.
When you think of in terms of it continuing, what kind of time frame do you just imagine when you hear this project to degrade and ultimately destroy ISIL?
Well, I think the context really is the operations that we've been undertaking for now for a long time against the first iteration of al-Qaeda, which has been a long time. I don't think anyone should assume this is going to be quickly resolved, but that's another reason why we have to be very careful in terms of using our most decisive weapons and not getting involved with boots on the ground, because that is has a very, very short sort of half-life in terms of how you can support those forces and how effective they can be.
But when you say it's not going to be done in a very short time, is this a euphemism for saying we have another body to worry about for the next 5 or 10 years?
Oh, I think, yes. I think also, too, and this is part of what the president has done and also spoke about tonight, is ultimately these are political issues that have to be settled by the Iraqis in Iraq and the Syrians in Syria and elsewhere. And that is not something that's going to happen very quickly. That's going to take some, courageous actions by local individuals and multilateral support, particularly regional support. So, I don't think we can sort of see this as just one episode, one or two quick lightning strikes. I think that was one of, frankly, the fallacies that the invasion of Iraq in 2003, which I opposed, where this was American arms could settle this in just a few months and the rest would be sort of wrapping up quickly. No. Think we've learned a lot.
Senator Reid, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you, Robert.
It's Democratic Senator Jack Reed of Rhode Island. And we turn now to the other chamber and the other party, Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. He's on the House Foreign Affairs Committee, also a veteran of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Congressman Kinzinger, you've said, do you believe that the president has the authority to conduct airstrikes against ISIS in Syria?
I do believe it. I believe it comes under the 2001 use of force authorization. I also think if the president decides to come to Congress to seek a specific use of force, that it would pass out of here. The American people, are united, I think, right now behind the fact that this is a clear threat to us, a clear threat to peace and stability in the region, and something that we have, as the president said, a burden to lead on.
Are you impressed with the president's stated aims and the means he's proposed?
Well, I think it was a good speech tonight, and I think it's about time. After a long time of equivocating, I think he finally has come out swinging a little bit. I'm a little upset with taking boots off the ground off the table initially, because in essence, what you're saying is, and I don't think we need to put boots on the ground right now, but what you're saying by taking it off the table is the presentation and the presence of ISIS is really bad, but what's even worse is if you have to use boots on the ground to push that back. While we may not intend to use it, you never take those issues off the table. But I think with strong air power, I think with as close air support with the Iraqi military as the president implied tonight, I do think he has a plan to push back ISIS and hopefully ultimately destroy them. And I think this was the beginning of probably what needs to be many speeches to the American people to explain what the United States of America is doing there and how we're using our fierce military.
Congressman Kinziger, thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
Adam Kinziger of Illinois, as you said, a veteran of the Iraq and Afghanistan wars. Mike Barbaro, you were a general in Iraq. There's a challenge here. The ISIL occupies a Syrian city, as we heard Deborah Amos saying earlier. They run Raqqa in Syria. What do you do? How does the military go about ousting a group that is governing a place without encountering at least all of the problems the Israelis have had in Gaza City, let's
right.
say?
Right. Well, they run Mosul also, mm-hmm. and large swaths of Iraq. And this is a fight for intelligence, to be able to target their structure, their leaders, the network. And it takes a mix of special operations forces. It takes a strong push by conventional forces to dislodge them and generate that intelligence. And it takes precision strikes. And you must have the proper mix of that. And I'm not sure we have that here. We have precision strikes by U.S. Air Forces. But the competent conventional forces, I don't see those for months, even if we do go into a heavy training mode with Iraqi security forces and the Peshmerga.
Tamara Wittish.
Robert, you know, the president talked a lot tonight about military options and military tactics, and we focused on that for good reason. But ultimately, what we can do militarily and even what our partners on the ground can do militarily simply creates space for political decision-making, political processes. That's what will ultimately squeeze this terrorist movement and degrade it and destroy it, is when there's governance in place so that people don't feel tempted to turn to this kind of extremist group for some kind of order. We managed to do that, I think, in Iraq. The president ultimately decided what he thought needed to happen in Iraqi politics, made it clear, and was willing to make an investment if Iraqis did what they needed to do. But we're going to have to repeat that across the region.
But what we've accomplished in Iraq is set up the possibility for a government to possibly elicit that response from its public. We got rid of a government that had failed in that respect. It's still a work in progress, isn't it, the new Abadi government?
Absolutely. And going to Vali's point about commitment, if people in the region, if these actors in the region don't believe that the United States is committed to helping guide the region toward mm-hmm. a new form of order, then they're not going to do the necessary. We're going to have to be in there for the long run to make them do their part.
So, Vali Nasir, I mean, at one time, the U.S. had a grand strategy in this region and others, which is we support democracy. We support the democratization of all these countries, and we want to see elections happen. Post-Arab Spring, what's left of that? What is our message to all these people? We just support stability?
Well, that was not a strategy. That was an aspiration.
Mm-hmm.
The strategy for it was that we're going to invade Iraq, change a dictatorship into a democracy, and that democracy would become an example for the region. That didn't work. And then our strategy basically became that we're going to withdraw from this region, that we don't see its troubles really that important to us, and we're going to come out of it. I think right now the problem is that the region has very long memory. I mean, they've seen the last time that we dislodged something like ISIS was the Taliban in Afghanistan. And that didn't happen by airstrikes. We actually had to invade Afghanistan and push them out.
But we did rely very heavily on Afghan troops, on northern Afghan forces,
right.
Didn't we, to do that?
We did. And that's the equivalent is Peshmerga. But those northern Afghan troops had been trained, but not by us, but by India, Iran, and Russia, and had decades of experience. I mean, consider the fact that right now, all the talk of the alliance is about Saudi Arabia and Jordan helping us, whereas most of the fighting on the ground, the country that has boots on the ground and is actually conceivably has been much more important to the Kurdish and Iraqi forces' success, is actually Iran. And Iran and Saudi Arabia don't see eye to eye in how this is going to unfold.
That's the understatement of the evening
that's
so far.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, look, just in Iran, in Syria, rather, can the United States effectively strike at ISIS without indirectly but substantially assisting Bashar al-Assad to remain in power and survive the civil war. Tamara, aren't we indirectly helping him?
Temporarily, perhaps. And if defeating ISIS was the only thing we did in Syria, if striking ISIS in Syria was the only thing we did, I think that we would largely be helping Assad. But for Assad to regain control over the whole territory of the Syrian state would be a major undertaking for him at this point. And there was a very interesting line in the president's speech tonight, actually, that seemed, if not a reversal, at least an acknowledgement that he's moved on Syria, where he said, "We must strengthen the opposition as the best counterweight to extremists like ISIL while pursuing the political solution necessary to solve Syria's crisis." Previously, he'd been inclined to hold back on robust support for what has often been called the moderate opposition, yes, waiting for a political process. So if that strategy is finally off the table, then you can have two prongs in Syria.
In his interview with Thomas Friedman of the New York Times, the president was rather dismissive not too long ago of the moderate opposition. How could teachers and pharmacists overthrow the Syrian regime? Let me ask a big question as we head near the end of this hour, which is, are events in Iraq and Syria, not to mention other countries in the region, does it all amount to more than just civil wars, but really a rewrite of the entire region, a rethinking of where the countries are, of you know, where the border between Syria and Iraq is and why? That is, are we reaching one of those Treaty of Versailles, Congress of Vienna moments where great powers sit down and redraw the map of the world? Vali Nasir?
That has to be part of an end game. I mean, ultimately, some of the issues that has caused ISIS, the civil war in Syria, the collapse of the Iraqi state, these are very large issues that involve the whole region, deep divisions. These are not, these cannot be patched over with just a counterterrorism operation. And ultimately, we could downgrade ISIS, but if we're going to address the problems of this region more fundamentally, we have to tackle the larger issues of division of power across the borders in the region.
What do you think about that, Tamara?
I actually think it's less about where the borders are and more about what these states are and what they're for. Citizens in the region have been redefining their priorities. Do they think of themselves as Arab first, as Muslim first? How important is Iraq to an Iraqi? Mm-hmm. This is what's in flux right now. The United States and other great powers have interests in how that comes out, but ultimately I don't think they're going to be able to determine it in the way great powers have determined the shape of the region in the past.
Mike Barbera, what do you think of that?
I think that as we look at this, and what struck me in Iraq is the deep divide between the Shia and Sunni population. We underappreciated that. But in my recent trips there, this divide has just been deepened.
Really?
And, you know, the question is, how do we incentivize the Sunnis to expel ISIS from these occupied areas? And if this strategy must set the conditions for that, we can do all of this. But at the end of the day, as long as the Sunnis acquiesce and don't take action to expel ISIS, then we're not going to be successful.
You say acquiesce. When you hear that at one point they said 800 ISIS fighters mm-hmm. took Mosul, mm-hmm. that sounds as if the local Sunni population more than acquiesced.
What I heard in Kurdistan talking to some of the minorities is, at best case, there's deep bitterness with the Sunnis. At best case, they acquiesced. At worst case, they were active participants with ISIS and going after the minorities. So it is... very deep divide, and that must be taken into account as we move to the future.
So retired Lieutenant General Mike Barbero, used to be the Deputy Commander in Iraq. Tamara Kaufman-Wittes of the Brookings Institution and Vali Nasir, Dean of Johns Hopkins University School of Advanced International Studies. Thanks to all three of you for talking about
Thank you.
Thank the
President's
you,
speech. We're now going to recap the major points of President Obama's speech this evening, in which he told the country that he will not hesitate to attack the group ISIS in Syria.
Clear that we will hunt down terrorists who threaten our country wherever they are. That means I will not hesitate to take action against ISIL in Syria as well as Iraq. This is a core principle of my presidency. If you threaten America, you will find no safe haven.
Now let's welcome back NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley. Scott, the president was speaking tonight to an American public that has been rattled by the brutal murders of two U.S. journalists and doubts about their commander-in-chief's ability to deal with the threat posed by this group that calls itself the Islamic State. How did he try to reassure the skeptical public?
Well, Robert, tonight the president went a step beyond what he the effort that began earlier this summer when, of course, he dispatched a small number of military advisors to Iraq. At the time, he said the U.S. military would not be propping up an Iraqi government that had lost the confidence of its Sunni population. Since then, of course, the Iraqis have formed a new government, and one would hope a more inclusive government. And last week, the president met with NATO allies about the threat posed by the Islamic State, and he came home with commitments for broad international support.
Tonight, with a new Iraqi government in place, and following consultations with allies abroad and Congress at home, I can announce that America will lead a broad coalition to roll back this terrorist threat.
The president likens this to the counterterrorism efforts that the U.S. has been conducting for years in places like Yemen and Somalia, relying on U.S. air power coupled with local fighters on the ground.
Now, Scott, even as Obama talked about what the U.S. would do to combat the Islamic State, he was also careful to say what the U.S. would not do.
He was, and he is really trying to distinguish this effort from a renewed Iraq war.
Anytime we take military action, there are risks involved, especially to the servicemen and women who carry out these missions. But I want the American people to understand how this effort will be different from the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan. It will not involve American combat troops fighting on foreign soil.
Again, he's counting on those local partners to do the ground fighting. In Iraq, that's the Kurdish Peshmerga. It could also be Sunni fighters if that new government does win back faith of some of the Sunni tribes. John Kerry, meanwhile, the Secretary of State, is in the Middle East right now negotiating with other Arab partners, hoping to bring them into the battle.
This is not our fight alone. American power can make a decisive difference. But we cannot do for Iraqis what they must do for themselves. Nor can we take the place of Arab partners in securing their region.
The big question, of course, is who will be the ground allies in Syria? Mm-hmm. That's perhaps the weak link. And so one of the things the president talked about doing is renewing his request for Congress to authorize more support and more training for the moderate opposition in Syria.
And is that the only thing that he's asking of Congress?
Well, the president's been very careful. Of course, he remembers well that a year ago he was stymied by Congress when he wanted authorization to have airstrikes in Syria. And the administration has made it clear they won't be hamstrung here by congressional inaction. The president says he has the authority to carry out more airstrikes without further congressional action. Still, he'd like to have lawmakers have
I believe we are strongest as a nation when the President and Congress work together. So I welcome congressional support for this effort in order to show the world that Americans are united in confronting this danger.
And Robert, tonight, Congress put off a vote on a spending bill to give them time to consider that authorization for training and equipping the Syrian opposition.
Thank you, Scott. It's NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley. You've been listening to NPR's special coverage of President Obama's address to the nation on the threat of ISIS. Our coverage continues tomorrow on Morning Edition. I'm Robert Siegel. Good evening.